on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, big thanks to Beta da Silva for driving us through the afternoon with some great music and entertainment. It is Wednesday, July 10th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, White Smoke from Abbottstown, the Republic of Ireland, have announced their new permanent men's senior national manager.
Hi there, I'm Hamir Hugginson. I'm delighted to be here and I hope I will see you in Aviva Stadium in September when we face England.
Alan Colley and Keith Tracy are with us, who give us their thoughts on that appointment, and we will reflect on Lamine Yamal etching his name at the Spanish folklore as Luis de la Fuente's men book their place in the Euro 2024 final. And of course, we'll preview tonight's clash between the Netherlands and England. Nadine Doherty reviews last weekend's ladies football quarterfinal action, while Damien Lawler has the latest GAA news, and we'll hear from Down's Pierce Laverty ahead of Saturday's Tulchan Cup final. As always, if you want to have your say, you can send us a text on 51552 or contact us on WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
Game on 2FM.
So, Alan Colley, Keith Tracy.
Hi there, I'm Hamir Hugginson. I'm delighted to be here and I hope I will see you in Aviva Stadium in September when we face England.
What are your thoughts, Alan Colley?
On last night or?
On the big news.
Yeah,
after a long 8 month wait, Heimir Hallgrímsson, the Icelandic manager, most recently with Jamaica, managing in the Copa America. They lost all three of their group games. Best known perhaps for knocking England out of Euro 2016, he was the manager then, is now the Republic of Ireland manager. A left field appointment.
Yeah, hugely, Shane. It came as a complete surprise. I don't think there was any murmurings of even an announcement, never mind somebody that has come, as you say, completely from left field. In all the speculation that has been long and drawn out process of 8 months, I think 231 days, this man's name hasn't been mentioned in any of that speculation. So a complete surprise. But in saying that, when you look at obviously a CV and Iceland, small nation like ourselves, I suppose, in terms of what he achieved, getting them qualified for the Euros, beating England, as you say, I think the man deserves respect and he deserves a chance and an opportunity. So I really don't think we're in a position where we can look down our noses at any appointment, to be quite honest with you. Throughout the last few months that we've discussed this, I've obviously felt that John O'Shea was in a position where I would be quite happy to probably go with John at this stage, and the backroom team that he assembled, he had 4 games, purely because the process was a bit of a disaster as well, and I was feeling the longer John is in it, the more likely he is to maybe become the permanent manager. Then when John's not named, you're probably thinking it's someone that we are quite familiar with, and just because we're not familiar with this man doesn't mean it's a bad appointment. So as I said, I'll reiterate the same thing, Shane, in the sense that I don't think we're in any position whatsoever, when you think of where Irish football is and where it's been over the last few years, to look down our nose at any man, and I'm quite prepared to give him a chance, give him an opportunity and give him the respect that he deserves.
Would you agree with that, Keith? We have to come at this with an open mind.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of what Alan's saying is right. You know, some people had their head in the clouds thinking we were going to go and get, you know, a manager who could fix all our problems. I'm not saying he can't do that, but 231 days it took to get this appointment right. And the longer it went on, the longer it was going into John O'Shea's favour for me. I think over the 4 friendlies, we were improving. There was building blocks put in place, and then all of a sudden, his first game now is going to be England at home, which, you know, is a huge, huge mammoth task. It's took forever for it to happen. And the fact that his last job was Jamaica in 2022 and walked away because of poor performance in the Copa America doesn't fill you with all sorts of confidence. He's had he's managed 135 games. He's a 39% win rate. And his best days came back in 2016 when Iceland beat England. So look, it's an underwhelming appointment for me. I'm sure Google is in absolute overdrive at the minute, people trying to find out a lot about him. So look, I'm like Alan, I'll sit back with an open mind, I'll see what he gets together and we'll assess it from there. But from the outside looking in, it's a very, very underwhelming appointment.
Well, one of the most returned Google searches, I believe. He did practice as a dentist, and I know the process was like pulling teeth, so perhaps it's a bit appropriate in that regard. How do you feel John O'Shea is feeling about this, Alan?
Yeah, I'd be interested to know John's thoughts on it, and I suppose throughout the speculation as well, whether John was going to get the job or whether he wasn't getting the job. Everybody was suggesting that whoever does come in, John may still be part of the backroom team. I don't think that'll be the case now at all. I'd say this manager will look to bring in his own staff maybe. So it will be interesting to get his view, get his thoughts. I mentioned here the last time, Shane, the fact that John stepped in as the interim the first time around, I was fine with that. The second time they asked him, I thought it was an insult to John O'Shea, and he should have put the gun to their head to basically say, I'm either going to be the manager or I am not. The fact that now he did the four games, now he's not the manager, I would love to get his thoughts and get his view on it. Whether we will or not, I'm not sure, but I'm sure in time we will maybe get our view on it. But it's just as I said, whatever about even the appointment being made today, I didn't even know there was going to be an announcement. So it caught everybody off guard. In some respects, you have to say they've done well to keep it under wraps. But then you have to ask the bigger questions in terms of the process, Shane. And the process has been an absolute disaster. And when you think back of some of the comments and the quotes from Mark Hanna earlier in the process, talking about other managers being under contractual agreements that we can't obviously come out and name. Was this fella the number one candidate? It's hard to believe, it really is, if he was the number one candidate from the outset, especially when you look at his CV and the jobs that he's had recently. So I think there's bigger questions to ask in terms of those people, Mark Hanna, and the process, because why has it taken it so long? But in terms of him, that's not his fault, this manager. But in terms of him, I'm happily prepared to give him the chance and the respect that he deserves. Because if you look at it and the team and where we're at, the challenges that he's going to face are similar to the ones that he has been facing under Iceland. And that might sound difficult for Irish fans to hear, but that's where we're at, Shane. Let's be realistic and honest about that. We're all watching the Euros at the moment, and we're a million miles off that level right now at this moment in time. Can he turn things around and get us to that level? He certainly, I suppose, with the challenges that he's already addressed with Iceland and getting them qualified, will be similar to the ones that we have, but he has a big job at hand.
Yeah, for me, I think it leaves a real sour taste in the mouth, because you look at the names that were getting thrown around, especially at the start, the likes of Lee Carsey. You're looking at that thinking, worked with kids before, has had amazing success with the English under-21s. You're thinking, could he come in and progress this Irish team, get us playing a certain way? That quickly got dampened down. And then most recently, we're looking at Willie Sanyal with Georgia in the Euros, and we're thinking, the way that Georgia team play, you can sort of make something there. And I was on here saying that Georgia have a load of brilliant dribblers, so Willie Sanyal's style coming into the Irish team, maybe not a match made in heaven, but you can see that Willie Sanyal, it gets your ears pricked up. You're thinking he's had recent success, okay, maybe we can get him in. And now we're here and you're thinking again, like the names that have been thrown around, we seem to have fell off a cliff, and here we are now. And like I say, it's just an underwhelming appointment.
Is underwhelming not where we're at as well? And I know you played under Trapattoni, but and this isn't a slight on him in any way, but perhaps getting the big name in was never going to be a realistic option because of the financial burden and the restraints that the FAI are under as well. That this is more of a coach coming in that fits the criteria. Judging from reading up on a few people, I think Chris Harrington, Kelly's brother actually, who has his...
I saw that, tweeted a few years back.
6 years ago, I believe who said, listen, FAI hit this man up, and who would have worked with him, from looking at a few tweets from Icelandic journalists, and said, this is going to be pragmatic football. This isn't going to be the free-flowing aspirational stuff that Stephen Kenny wanted to play, that we're going to grind in. And even from Heimer's comments about, let's qualify for tournaments, that's ultimately where we need to be.
Yeah, look, I get all that, but when you're looking at from John O'Shea's point of view, you're looking at the four games he's played. I think the team were improving, we played better opposition than us, and on paper we were largely competitive. And it just seemed for me like it was leaning there, and the longer it went on, I thought maybe they have a big name in their back pocket. And I mean a relative big name, you know. I never expected Pep Guardiola to walk in the door, but I thought we would have somebody. And if we're coming away from John O'Shea, I expected it to be a name that people would know readily, people would be familiar with, we would know we're getting on board and we could get behind. But the fact that it's a relative unknown, people will be googling him, seeing he's just like me today, seeing how he is. And look, again, I'd sit back like Alan. I will see how do you set up, but I do think it leaves a sour taste in the Irish fans.
I think what's gone against John probably is just the fact that he hasn't managed. And if they did appoint John, that would have been the first stick that they would have tried to beat.
But this is not a CV that John O'Shea has to bow down to, is what I'm saying. I thought there'd be a CV where John O'Shea go, fair enough, you've been there.
I totally get that. And as I said, I would have happily left John out, especially when he had the four games. But I think what's probably gone against him is that, because again, they would have been hit with a lot of criticism in relation to maybe John not managing and his lack of experience and whatever. So now they've brought someone in that has that experience, and obviously he's qualified for tournaments, managed at the highest level, if you like, at the Euros or whatever, getting them to the World Cup. So I think that's probably their mindset in terms of maybe going against John. But as I said, I would have happily gone with John, but I think that's where they're probably coming from. And again, they're going to get criticised as well, but I would agree with you, Shane, in the sense that this is where we're at. Let's be realistic and honest about this. And you look at, I suppose, the squad that's assembled at the moment, and you mentioned there from, I suppose, Icelandic journalists, and even when you look at, I remember watching those games, and when they beat England, it will be pragmatic and it will be well organised, disciplined, low block stuff, to use a phrase of the modern era, if you like. And that's exactly what we'll see. But when Stephen was trying to implement this free-flowing football, everybody was critical of that as well, because the players couldn't do it. So I think when we have this manager, and the point I'm making about the challenges that he has already faced with a lesser nation, if you like, that's exactly the challenges that he's going to face with us. Because when we play those top nations, it'll be the same thing, with better teams dominating the ball, us trying to be pragmatic in defensive situations and trying to just grind out results, if you like. And that's the reality of it all.
Well, he is up in front of the press tomorrow, where the assembled media can put many questions to the new Republic of Ireland, Heimir Hallgrímsson. But he was speaking this afternoon to FAI TV.
Heimir, welcome to Ireland. You must be absolutely delighted to be here.
Yeah, surely, surely. It's been quite a hectic time since I stopped, so there's a lot of things going on, but finally this is done deal, and really happy to be here.
You've just flown in this morning, even, so just straight into the interview. What excites you to come to Ireland?
Well, it's first and foremost, it's an exciting project. I think Ireland has underperformed a little for the recent years. Young and talented squad, but still with a lot of experience, or international experience, so they have games under the belt. And I think the future is here. So that is one thing. Secondly, I really like the administration, how they approached their professionalism and how they kind of treated me with respect, etc. So that was another thing that really impressed me.
When did you first hear of the interest, obviously, to come to Ireland?
Well, it was some time back I heard, but like others that kind of contacted, I told them I would be focused on Copa America, and we decide after the Copa what we will do. So, no, it was just an honour to be thought of as the next possible coach for the Republic.
And obviously your first game's now looking ahead very quickly to September the 7th, England at the Aviva Stadium. Couldn't be a bigger baptism of fire, I suppose.
No, similar to when I took over Jamaica first game in five days or 6 days, was we are playing Argentina, by the way. So it's a similar thing, but no, it's always good to play the top teams. It would always, you know, expose your weaknesses, etc. So it's good to have a tough game as the first one, but it will be a big test. Hopefully we will have a full house supporting the team, and we never know. You never know in football.
You obviously already have previous experience against England, that famous win for Iceland. You were head coach at that time. Obviously, fantastic memories.
Yeah, it was one of probably our biggest game in history, and on a big stage in the Euros. So, no, it was a good memory, good memory.
But what made Iceland successful at that time? I suppose there's lessons from that you could maybe try and implement here at all?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities between the Irish and the Icelanders. Yeah. So the character is really similar. It's hardworking people, honest people, enjoy life. Normally when they have a drink or two, they start to sing. It's similar to both countries. But I think the values are similar. And I think we can do similar things on the pitch as well. So, you know, there are some elements that you always need in international football. And I think it's going to be exciting to see how much we can have hands on in the beginning. But of course, it will take time.
obviously everything takes time. As well as a style of play, you've obviously had chances to implement style of play with Iceland and Jamaica. What do you see you be able to implement here with this young team?
No, I think what has been done in the past, the previous coaches, has been really helpful. So learning from that, they have been doing from a little bit more ball possession type football. But I thought the General Shea took it a little bit back to more kind of basics. And we should always start from basics and build on from there.
You've had time to look at the young squad, which you've referenced. Plenty of talent. So are you excited to work with this young talent and maybe bring them to the next level on an international stage?
Yeah, like I said before, I think it's not only a young squad with potential, but they have already a lot of matches, international matches. So that is a good thing coming into this environment. They already have the experience of playing at this level, which is always the toughest thing to give players the first games to. Some players need one game, others need 10 games to be like regular national team players, but they all have a lot of games under the belt now, so that's a fantastic thing for me.
And you obviously, part of the role, speaking to Mark Cannon there, was that what you attracted you here was also to be part of the journey of Irish football. You know, there's obviously a bigger thing going on at the moment, Football Pathways Plan, trying to implement from underage football all the way up to the international. Is that something you want to get involved in?
Yeah, but I did that back in Iceland, so I was involved in more than the first national team, the same in Jamaica and the same when I was in Qatar. So, no, not like I'm going to interfere, but it would be nice to give maybe one or two new ideas, because it surely worked back home in Iceland, and so probably we can give some ideas. But yeah, no, that is amazing to be a part of this, and I know there's a lot of good things going on here. Let's hope we can make them all gelled, so the first team will spark something as well.
And finally, 24,000 season ticket holders. It's one of the most in Europe, European footballs. It's quite an incredible home support we have here. Away support's always sold out, pretty much. How excited are you to get in front of the Irish support and make that connection with the supports?
Now, this is unique, really, really unique. And like I said in initially, I think the Irish are hardworking, but they're also proud people, proud of their heritage and who they are. And you can always build a lot around hardworking people, proud people, and if you can implement some other aspects, then the team should represent those characteristics on the pitch. So looking really, really forward to meeting the fans on the stadium.
Well, thank you very much. Welcome to Ireland, and we'll see you at the Aviva Stadium soon.
Well done.
I don't know how unique it is having a few thousand season ticket holders at an international football match, but however, will Irish fans take them? It's result dependent.
That's what you call straw clutching, I think, Shane. And that's my point about where we're at. You know, that's the reality. People need to realise that. And there was a lot of snobbery towards, I suppose, the reaction to that appointment as well today, that people, the entitlement that we feel as though we should be at tournaments and we should be beating the big boys. We're nowhere near that level, and the reasons we're nowhere near that level boils right back down to stuff that's going on at grassroots and academy setups and all those kind of things and structures. But people rock up to the Aviva for an international match, and when we lose to someone, they think, oh, why is this happening? So people need to realise what's going on in Irish football, and it's been a bit of a shambles for a long time. And as I said to you earlier on, that's why I'll give the man a chance and an opportunity, because I think he deserves that respect, because we're in no position to turn our nose up at anybody.
Well, we will see what comes of the media tomorrow. I know he was welcoming, he's a big fan of the granny rule and bringing back some players to Jamaica. He said he was open to Mason Greenwood returning as well, and some interesting comments on that as well. So lots to be asked of the Republic of Ireland manager, Heimir Hallgrímsson, tomorrow with his official press conference and unveiling. And I know you enjoy my stats. So Heimir Hallgrímsson becomes the first Republic of Ireland boss to have lost to St. Patrick's Athletic when he was managing IBV in the Europa League in 2011, since current St. Pat's manager Stephen Kenny when he was managing Dundalk in the Leinster Senior Cup in 2018.
Yeah, well, I seen that tweet earlier, and I don't
credit
know.
Credit to Dermot Looney.
Give Dermot the credit. I'm one step ahead of you for those stats. Yeah.
We'll have another one later on. Credit to Colin Miller regarding Spain. Keith Tracy, what were you doing when you were 16 years and, what is it, 232 days old? Lamine Yamal was banging in.
I'm not exactly sure, but I was knocking around Blackburn somewhere. But I know exactly why you're asking me that question. You know what I mean? Yamal, what a performance. And the whole thing with Ravio beforehand, sending the tweet, basically throwing down the gauntlet to the young man, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And the way when he cuts in on his left foot, the danger starts, the bells are ringing, you're thinking, can he do it from there? And Sky Sports put a stat up saying the chances of that going in from there is 0.02, the expected goals return. So it was a brilliant, brilliant finish from the young man. I've been equally impressed with Williams on the opposite side. I've been really, really liking him. And it's this. People are looking at the Spanish team, and look, I think Yamal is obviously 16, Williams is 21, Pedri, who was injured, is only 21, Fernand Torres 24, Cucurella 25, and Gavi, who's obviously injured as well, is 19. The spine of this Spanish team could be together for the next 10, maybe more years. So look, this could be the start of a lot of dominance in Europe, maybe even the World Cup as well for Spain. They look brilliant defensively, look really, really good. And yeah, on the wings, it's brilliant. I love watching them play. As I say, Williams just as impressive as Lamine Yamal. I expected Yamal to maybe hit a brick wall, being 16, having so many big games put in front of him, but he just keeps knocking them down. He's been absolutely outstanding and probably the player of the tournament.
It was probably the best half of football of the tournament.
Yeah, I was crying down the phone at 16, homesick, wanted to come home from Leeds.
Oh, really? Really? So you were toughing it out in Blackburn, and you were trying to run away from Leeds.
I'm an honest man, Shane, I'll tell you straight out.
I was neither at that level, so I won't reveal what I was doing at that age.
I actually seen this lad play live earlier on in the season over at one of the Champions League matches against Napoli, and he didn't stand out as if thinking, this lad's going to be a superstar. But I think the reason he stood out was purely for the fact that he's only 16. And you're thinking, playing at this level, it's absolutely phenomenal. And then he's obviously carried on the form towards the end of the season and then makes his debut with the national team. He's in the tournament. And for him to be doing what he's doing, and the one thing that's impressed me so much is the composure he's shown. For 16 years of age, he's almost playing like a seasoned campaigner. And if you look at him as well, I think the one thing you always get with youth is they can be very raw. And they can make mistakes purely down because of their age and obviously the lack of experience, if you like. He rarely gives the ball away. Like, his decision making is phenomenal. He always picks the right pass. And if you look at him even cutting in, it's a pass across the goal. You think of his assist to Danny Olmo there at the weekend. It's a lovely little pass, perfectly weighted as well. That's another thing, his weight of pass is excellent, Shane. So to be doing what he's doing at 16 is absolutely phenomenal. And like Keith said, when you think of the young talent that they have, you could throw Cubarsí into that as well, the young centre half for Barcelona as well, who's just emerged. He's just missed out on the squad. I thought actually Laporte was outstanding last night, probably the best game I've seen him play. And when you think of the tournament so far, you mentioned there, Shane, the best half of football, it absolutely was. But I think over the course of what we've seen so far, and I said this to you the other night, there's only been one standout team and it has been Spain. And if there's any justice whatsoever, they'll go on now and win the final. I know football always doesn't work out like that, and there's a semi-final tonight and they have to play the final. But when you think they've won the 6 matches already, the way they've lit up the tournament, the special individuals, and as a team, the football that they've played. And I think the manager deserves a lot of credit as well, De La Fuentes. So I think, as I said, if there's any justice, they'll go on and win the tournament now.
Credit to Colin Miller, like I gave credit to Dermot Looney earlier. Colin Miller, journalist, said, since May 2001, Spanish teams have played non-Spanish teams in 22 major finals, Champions League, Europa League, World Cup, Euros, and the Spanish side has won all 22 finals. So that backs up your belief that Spain will go.
That's phenomenal.
Will go all the way. We talk about Lamine Yamal. As a former professional footballer, the touch from Danny Olmo, and a man who probably wouldn't even been playing if Pedri was fit. Just how difficult is that under pressure as well, the composure, and to finish it for, I think, what was eventually credited as his goal. It was his goal, an own goal, back to his goal. So we're hoping it's his goal.
This might be a bit controversial. I thought the first touch was better than the second touch. I'm not sure what Tuchemani is doing for the second touch, because the body shape of Olmo, he's never going to be able to hit it with his right foot because Tuchemani is down the channel of it. So he's always going to try and check that back on his right or take it on his left. So the fact fact that two Tchouaméni boys, that dummy and the look at the touches, is world class, but I do think the defending leaves an awful lot to be desired. A wonderful finish from there. Look at the French for me, like the one thing, and again I know people have said I'm old school, why wasn't Olivier Giroud on the pitch earlier? Like they struggled to score goals all throughout the tournament, the French. Mbappe was really, really poor. Put Giroud on, occupy some centre halves and give Dembele that little bit of pace, and people will be saying it's Olivier Giroud. He's France's all time leading goal scorer. He's ahead of Henri, Platini, Zidane, all of these players. And you look at England with Harry Kane, very, very reluctant to move him because of the amount of goals he scored for the country. But with France, Giroud sitting there, I take the point he's probably not at full fitness. He scored 15 goals this season for AC Milan. So for me, Deschamps, I'm sure that's something that a stick that people will use to beat him with, but generally the French were really, really poor. And Mbappe has said that his competition was a failure. He wasn't good enough, the team weren't good enough, and he deserved to go home.
Would you use that as a stick to beat Deschamps with?
Yeah, it's something he'll definitely look back on, because I thought Dembele was really poor on the night. Like his final product, he flatters to deceive every time I watch him. And for a fella with so much pace and skill, like his lack of goals and assists and all sorts, all the numbers are just not backed up that from a player that you would expect to be playing at the level that he is. I thought Griezmann as well. I know he hasn't had a great tournament, but I would have had him on earlier as well. I really like Griezmann. Rabiot struggled. I probably would have started Camavinga. So the whole midfield, I think the four that he ended with was what he probably should have went with. Maybe not Giroud. I get Colo Muani starting over Giroud, but as Keith said, bring him on with maybe a half an hour to go, because Colo Muani for me struggled as well in the game. You'd always leave Mbappe on. I would have had Dembele off earlier. Rabiot obviously came off. So yeah, but they haven't played well, Shane. That's my point about if there's any justice. They just haven't played well. And I know we'll get to England and the Netherlands, and I'll repeat myself when it comes to that as well, in the sense that they're just not playing well enough to win a tournament. And I know people say, oh well, you can grind it out, and that's what we've seen England getting to this point. But at some point you have to play. You have to play some level of football to try and win a tournament, especially when you come up against the likes of a Spain, because you know they're going to deliver. You know the form that they're in. Obviously, as I said, they've won the six matches. So one of those teams that are left now, Netherlands and England, and if it was France last night who didn't play, we got our answer there. One of those two that are left now that are going to face Spain, they have to play. You can't grind it out. You won't. And I've been saying it all along. And if it comes to Sunday night and they grind it out, win the penalties, I'll be disgusted. But I just don't think you can. I think you have to play some level of football at some point, and Spain have played all the football.
For this evening's match, Keith, are we going to see what we saw in the first half last night, or will it be more of a second half? Will it be entertaining, free flowing, or will it be tactical, I suppose, is the polite phrase?
This will be a tactical battle, I think. I don't think we're going to get an awful lot of goals. The Dutch have kept six clean sheets in the last 10 games. I think the English will be very cagey. I don't think they'll come out all guns blazing. I think the Dutch will have the lion's share of possession, just because the front lads for England, for me, there's no sharpness, there's no zip in their press. So I think the Dutch will keep the ball, they'll try and pick holes, and maybe it'll be England on the counter attack. That's why, look, I'd love to see Gordon going in there, just because I think in transition he can travel up the pitch really, really quickly. But look, they're eking out results, and it's nobody would want the English to go about it this way, but maybe, you know, this noise is a little bit better than it's coming home noise. And I mean that from a player's point of view, that the pressure, I expected them to be beat by the Swiss. I know the penalties is a lottery and they've limped on through. They needed extra time against Slovakia as well. But it seems like people are waiting for them to fail rather than expecting them to go and win the tournament. And maybe it's a different side of the coin, and the English players are maybe just feeling they let off the leash that little bit. It's been very, very underwhelming. But to pick up on Alan's point, Ancelotti doesn't play an awful lot of football, but they win an awful lot of games. You know, they can isolate, they go 1-0 down, the last 5 minutes they roll the dice and they blow teams away. So Bellingham, Real Madrid, is their Ancelotti style. And I know people are saying Ancelotti's won a lot of stuff, Gareth Southgate hasn't. Southgate's had relative success with England, and I know he hasn't won it, but he's got closer than any other England manager, and I do feel they're very, very close. And if they can win this, what a final it would set up.
Is there a fear England are going to become Greece of 2004?
Well, I'd hate to see that from, I suppose, the
entertainment
Yeah, absolutely. And not just the entertainment, but we all, like, there's nothing better than watching Spain perform and the skillful players and seeing lovely football. And I know it always doesn't work out like that, and I've no issue with that. And I know there's more than kind of one way to skin a cat in terms of the way you want to play, but that's the way we all want to see the game, especially the major tournaments. And if you're to go on and win it, I would always feel the best team will prevail, kind of the ones that are playing the football. I know it hasn't happened in your example there of Greece, and maybe you might say Portugal as well when they won it. But I can't fathom how that it will happen if they keep playing. And all the evidence so far and what we've seen, they've been so poor, Shane. Now, I know they've been relying on individual brilliance, and you can't keep relying on that. Obviously, Bellingham comes up with the goal, it should have been out. Saka then in the game, and Saka's been probably their best player, I would say, in the tournament. He's been absolutely brilliant, but you can't keep relying on that. At some point, the cohesive unit has to kind of take over, and that's where they've struggled. Southgate has struggled with this group of players. I know he's quite conservative in his approach anyway. But so for me, Spain will win it out, and I think the best team will prevail. But I think England will get the job done tonight. Now, I don't think it'll be by any means comfortable. I think it's a tough one to call. It's very much 50-50. I think the Netherlands have been okay in the tournament. At best, I covered the earlier game against Poland, and they started off really well. I think Gakpo has been really good for them. Midfield is a struggle for them, because obviously they've no Frankie de Jong. And the lads that have come in, Shooting and Veerman, are ordinary enough, to be honest with you. Depay has struggled in the tournament as well. I don't think he's anywhere near the elite level, even though his international goal scoring record is absolutely phenomenal. If I was to call it out to you, I think it's 85 goals, you wouldn't believe it. It's absolutely phenomenal. But when you look at him, he always kind of looks like a fella who's a little bit below the elite level. Something similar maybe with a Morata, but I think it'll be 50-50 tonight, but I think England will edge it. But I can't see any of these two beating Spain. I really can't.
Okay, gents, we are pushed for time, but just briefly, Rovers getting a draw, 10-man Shamrock Rovers getting a draw in Iceland last night. Good result for Stephen Bradley's side.
Yeah, excellent result, and I think that would have been the remit from Shamrock Rovers, going over there, keep the tie in the balance, bring them back to Tallaght with all to play for. And they've done that, as you said, a late sending off, but managed to defend really well. The shape was brilliant, and that was the one criticism I would always throw at Shamrock Rovers. When they go into Europe, they play an awful lot like they do in the League of Ireland, and they get punished for the turnover in possession. But I thought they were a lot better last night. Had just under 30% of the ball, but defensive shape was brilliant, and could have nicked it, as Stephen Bradley has alluded to already.
Yeah, not many chances with Johnny Kenny's chance.
Great chance at the end, yeah. And he's been in good form, Johnny, to be fair. He's obviously getting a run in the team and scoring goals domestically. So, but again, I would agree with Keith, that's one of the criticisms, and maybe Bradley has learned from that going away from home. You have to be a bit pragmatic, you have to give respect to the opposition compared to what you're playing against here. So if he's learned from that, and obviously last night looks like he has, and now take them back and get the job done over in Tallaght, I think it was a good result, positive result for them.
Damien O'Mara will be previewing tomorrow's Conference League clashes for the League of Ireland sides. I won't be here, but I'm assuming.
I just can't believe, Keith, I'm still trying to get my head around Ancelotti and Southgate.
Well, Bellingham there's a link, isn't it?
Real Madrid play a lot more better football than England ever played.
final word, just briefly, because none of us will be here tomorrow. Darien Shells to win tomorrow?
Yeah, I think so.
Darien Shells to win tomorrow. Good, that fills me with confidence.
There you go.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for popping into the studio. We're taking a short break. Lots to get through still. Nadine Doherty is going to be with us reviewing the ladies' football quarterfinals, and Damien Lawler has the latest Gaelic Games news.
RTE 2FM.
Game on.
GAA.
Now, RTE Sports, Damien Lawler joins us to chat Gaelic Games. And listen, we will be previewing the All-Ireland football semi-finals in detail later on this week. But Damien, there is a massive titanic tussle in the Tulchan Cup final between Down and Laois this Saturday, 3 p.m. in Croke Park. It should be, hopefully, will be a cracker of a contest.
Yeah, I think it will, Shane. It's after coming in under the radar, to be honest with you. I think Down got beaten in last year's final, and they were expected by many to go and win it, but they got a blitzkrieg by Meath, who had a bit of a goal rush in that final. And they were really, really disappointed. It set back maybe Conor Laverty's project a little bit, because Conor wanted to fast track Down's rejuvenation and get them back into the thoroughfare, I suppose. They were very, very unlucky in Ulster this year, but now they face a Laois side that are rejuvenating under Justin McNulty. And a Laois side that's got better and better every single game they've played this year. So look, at the prize is huge. A place in Sam Maguire next year is absolutely massive for both of those counties. Down have probably been on the road a little bit longer looking for this revival, but Laois have fair speed achieved under Justin McNulty. But I was speaking to one of the Down players, the former captain last year as well, Pierce Laverty, and I think we'll probably hear from him now in a moment, Shane. But Pierce is all about just getting silverware now. That's what the Down team want. They want silverware. They want a return to the good old days for Down football as well, Shane.
Absolutely. Well, let's hear from the man himself, Pierce Laverty, speaking to Damien Lawler.
Pierce,
I suppose just from talking to you the last couple of years, like, resilience is the word that strikes me when talking about you guys and the respect that you've shown this competition. You've shown a due respect. You've bounced back from a few disappointments, and I'm sure it's great to be looking forward to a final again.
Yeah, I suppose you've probably heard me say over the last couple of years that how young the panel is and how much respect we're giving the competition, because this is where we're at. You know, there's no point saying we deserve to be in Samogare football when we haven't proved that in the past. So, look, we just look at it all. I look at it personally. It's all a learning curve. So all the defeats and even some of the wins going to the wire and through the league and in the Talton Cup and Ulster Championship, you know, it's all learning. It's all in the bank now. We've experienced them moments and now we want to right some wrongs this year, do you know, and go the whole way.
20 to 25 would nearly be the average age of the squad.
Yeah.
And can you see it on the training field, Pearce, that those learnings, once disappointment is dealt with, that they're coming through in training, that lads are just maybe that extra 1 or 2% different that would have maybe had a different outcome? Can you see it on the field?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we both know it doesn't happen overnight, but definitely we can see them improvements. And every night I'm seeing some of the younger fellas especially getting better and better, and, you know, it's great to see their confidence growing being a part of them big days. Yes, some of them were hard to be a part of in the likes of the Ulster Championship and the Talton Cup last year, but to have that under their belt now is some learning going forward, you know.
It's a tight ship that Conor runs here as well, isn't it, Pearce? And like, it's a credit to the squad that everybody has stayed put with it, and it's an intense ship, I would imagine. But ultimately, you're all going in one direction, and you have a journey you want to take as well.
Yeah, it's definitely an intense environment. It's a challenging environment, especially with Lav and Marty and Kieran and the lads. It's very challenging, but it's also I love coming to train. Yeah. I look forward to coming to train. When I'm not at train, I can't wait to get back in the train. Even you get that wee bit of crack every now and then, but then like a light switch, it's back to in the zone and in that intense environment. But that's the way I want to be. I want to be challenged every night I go to train, and that's how I like it, and that's how it is here. Every night you go to train, whether it be a training session, a running session, a video session, a gym session, you're challenged by this management team, and it's been brilliant so far.
That was Down's Pearce Laverty speaking to Damien Lawler. As I mentioned, we will be chatting more about the Tulchan Cup on Friday's show, an extended show. We're on air at 6 o'clock with you all the way until 10 o'clock with coverage of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team's Euro qualifier in England. Kerry Armagh and Donegal Galway will also be covered. But speaking of lower tier competitions, I suppose, Damien, the GAA, they're trying to go one step further with a third tier competition.
Yeah, certainly. And the CCCC has put together a discussion document for all the counties to ponder and consider. And they've been gaining and gleaning their feedback over the last 3 or 4 months. And they've circulated the document for further feedback in the coming months. But this document is full of identifying the problems, the perceived problems that are out there from counties, potential solutions to each. There's 6 proposals as regards championship structure. We seem to be forever tweaking the championship structure, Shane. A document has been circulated for the counties, and one of those 6 proposals is to introduce a third tier competition. Now, the CCCC are not leaning either way. They're not telling counties that there should be one, nor that there shouldn't be one either. But I have to say that there is an alternative championship format laid out should the third tier come in. So it's there in black and white for these counties. And I think a lot of maybe attention will come from Division 4 and Division 3 counties to see if they actually want it. So it seems to be that the CCCC will definitely consider the opinions of counties from Division 4 and 3 especially. But you're looking at a similar format to the Tailteann Cup and the Sam Maguire, in that there'll be a few group stages in. You're also looking at the third tier final being played as a curtain raiser to an All-Ireland football semi-final, and all the usual trappings will apply. And I think the main reason for offering this up is they want to give counties that maybe have very little hope of winning silverware that tangible carrot of getting a cup, similar to hurling where everything is tiered off. It remains to be seen, because a lot of counties, I won't name them at the moment, but a lot of counties have let it be known to me that they're in favour of it. And then if you speak to maybe counties from maybe the lower echelons of Division 2 or the top echelons of Division 3, they feel that if this comes in, those counties will just go further adrift of the mainstream. So it's a really intriguing one. But what's next? Counties will get a chance to consider it. And as the discussion document is fleshed out further, you know, you could see a proposal for a third tier. It's likely you'll see a proposal going forward, maybe anyway, for a vote at the very least, Shane. So it's definitely not just pie in the sky talk. And I think you've had managers like Oisín McConville from Wicklow coming out in the media saying that it would be a welcome addition to the calendar as well. So interesting times on that front.
Okay, certainly one to keep an eye on, and we will be doing just that. Before we let you go, Damien, the managerial merry-go-round continues. Willie Marr stepping down as the Laois senior hurling manager, the latest.
Fine lines there, Shane. We had a story on RT.ie last night with Willie stepping away after 2 years in charge. Willie was appointed, has seen a very, very good, strong appointment. Two championships in Dublin with Coola, All-Ireland Minor Championship with Tipperary in 2012. Progressive young manager, brought Laois to the Joe McDonagh Cup final in his second year, won Division 2A this year. They're guaranteed Division 1A hurling next season. Laois shot 17 wides in the Joe McDonagh Cup final against Offaly, and Willie decided to step down last night. And it's fine lines because, you know, you'd imagine if they won the Joe Mac, he might have stayed going there and brought them in to the Division 1 and maybe the Lee McCarthy Cup, well, potentially next year. But when I say Lee McCarthy Cup, you have to play the winners of you have to kind of go into a relegation playoff, so I'm aware of that. But the point I'm making, it's fine lines between a cup in the bag and then maybe leaving with a bit of heartbreak, I suppose, because Offaly were champions on the day, but Laois will regret their chances. And what it's done now is probably comes in the wake of Mickey Hart's departure. It's not obviously as high profile, but I think you're going to see over the next 5 or 6 weeks, Shane, once the championship comes to an end, you're going to see a lot of managerial moving around. Certainly was the case last year. I thought that maybe work might quieten off for a few weeks last year when the championship was over. It only got busier. Managers came and went everywhere. So you have vacancies now in Waterford Hurling. Who's going to get that? I presume maybe a Darragh Sullivan from Ballygunner will be linked with that. But could it go to a Derek McGrath or a Brick Walsh as well? You're going across the Galway. Matty Kenny's name will be firmly in the mix there. Will Micheál Donoghue make a move back, or will he stay put with Dublin? Antrim, will Darren Gleeson stay put? And if not, where will Darren go? You know, could Darren go to Laois if he leaves Antrim, or will he stay put? Who knows? So I think all this is going to take shape over the next few weeks. And you have a man there called Davy Fitzdenshay that will be linked to jobs left, right and centre. And I guess if you're looking at the football, then, you know, Gerard Brennan staying with Loud, you know, a really, really good season, and Mickey Hart decided to jump ship. So sometimes you have to be very, very careful about the move you make. Although Mickey Hart will argue that it was a reasonable season for Derry. Now, it didn't end the way they wanted. But just watch this space over the next few weeks, Shane. There's going to be lots of movement left, right and centre. And I think if you're a man into speculation or a woman into speculation, you'll be very, very busy over the next month or so.
So what you're telling me is, even when the All-Irelands are decided, we're still going to be tapping you up of a Wednesday for this phone call, Damien.
Yeah, certainly until I take a few holidays. Anyway, Shane, if I can actually get around to that, but no, it's miserable. It's fifth gear from the moment the final whistle blows. Well, I think the Camogie final is over August 11th, and then moving and shaking left, right, and centre.
Great stuff. For now, we'll leave the conversation there. RTE Sports Gaelic Games aficionado, Damien Lawler. Great chatting as always.
Game on.
GAA. 2FM.
Game on.
Ladies football.
Now, Nadine Doherty joins us to chat ladies football after four cracking quarterfinals in the championship. And I suppose there's only one place to begin. Galway 3-7, Dublin 1-12. How big of a shock was this that Galway prevailed over a team that many people fancy to go all the way?
Well, I don't know who or what I'm going to talk about now for the next few weeks, Shane. Now that Dublin are gone.
We've plenty to get her stuck into.
Oh, listen, massive, massive shock. I think Galway were 16-1.
Wow.
Yeah, so that just shows, you know, they had such a poor league and we've spoken about them so much in the show, but you know, I suppose I have to start with the positive with them. You know, it was the Galway we know exists but had yet to appear this season, and they really stood up, Shane, when it counted. You know, I felt with the game, watching the game, Dublin were punished for what I think was about a 50% conversion rate. You know, they look back, at times they were in complete control of this game, especially, you know, from the second half into extra time all the way through, but they just didn't have their clinical firepower up front, Shane, to take the chances they created. I think they had about 35 chances in total. And yeah, you know, so usually with Dublin,
okay, that's very much putting it into context.
You know, usually with Dublin and what Galway did, you know, we would see Dublin wear teams down and have that firepower. They go up 2 or 3 points and the next thing you know, you're 7 or 8 points down and the game is over. But Galway didn't let them do that. You know, they just wouldn't let them open up that gap. And Galway, their work rate was phenomenal. And you could see that Dublin were rattled. You know, Galway had this massive high press, whereas, you know, we've seen this season teams have dropped back and let Dublin play. Galway didn't do that. Their forwards worked absolutely tirelessly, and you know, they had that aggression that they've been lacking all season. I suppose then you'd look at the Dublin team and you have to mention it, and it's not to take away from the Galway performance, but you know, they were missing Carla Rowe, Orla Nolan and Kate Sullivan, you know, three of their top forwards. Huge losses. And I would feel, especially Carla Rowe, especially, you know, with that leadership that she brings, not just in terms of scoring, but her organisation for kickouts, you know, she really manages the troops at, you know, in those times, and they were missing that. But as well, I think a big factor was Dublin got a huge dose of their own medicine, Shane, in terms of the physical nature of the game. You know, we've seen Dublin at times, you could say, you know, push the rules a little bit, you know, in terms of checking a player off the ball and so on. It's a part of the game. The ref let things go hugely. I mean, there didn't really seem to be a rule book, and I haven't seen Dublin push
let it go
that
too
way
much.
I felt at times, yeah, you know, I did feel at times, you know, there were a few players sin binned and could have been sent off later in the game, and again, this is both sides. I enjoyed it. I like a physical game of football. It was great in that regard. But it's, I suppose, you know, we talk about that lack of consistency with refereeing. It had no impact on the result of the game. Don't, you know, I'm not saying it did, but it was a bit wild at times, let's say. But yeah, listen, the big thing as well, Dublin missed chances. I think Caoimh O'Connor as well was very much taken out of the game. Aoife Cailleag did a brilliant job on her. And Caoimh is so important to Dublin in terms of their transition. And Aoife Cailleag just went everywhere with her. She was physical, and that really deterred Dublin in terms of their transition. And look, they missed chances, and you don't want to single people out, but they missed a couple of frees, they missed goal chances. And at the other end, Galway were so clinical, and I'm absolutely delighted for Aoife O'Rourke, who got the winning goal, because she was full forward for Galway the whole way through the league when things weren't going well, the Kilkerran players weren't available, and you know, she was up there ploughing a lone furrow up front. So I'm absolutely delighted that she was the one to win it for them.
Well, massive congratulations to Galway. Something about the summer with Galway shocking the
boat. I know. Well, hopefully there'll be no shock now this Sunday against Donegal.
Armagh defeated Mayo by 6 points. Fair to say, tactically, Armagh completely outplayed Mayo.
Oh, absolutely. I think Mayo management have to go back and have a bit of a reflection if they're to make any progress next year, Shane. Fully deserving. It was very different to the Dublin Galway game. I think 6 points flattered Mayo. And when Aoife McCoy scored that second goal for Armagh with 20 minutes left to go, I mean, it was game over. As you said, tactically, Armagh completely outplayed Mayo. Mayo had all the possession, but Armagh were so compact in defence. They were so well organised, as they have been all year, and their transition into attack was fantastic. They didn't really miss Amy Mackin in that game, you know, which is fair play to the forwards. Also, Kelly Mallon didn't play, so you had Eve Lavery and Niamh Henderson really stood up, Shane. And I found that with Henderson in the last few games, as if that void by Mackin, she's really stepped up in that regard. And Lavery coming back from injury was brilliantly timed. Blaheen Mackin, huge influence on the game. She was sweeping, she was in midfield, she got a goal and a point. You know, she was really commanding things. Caroline O'Hanlon was back. They were full value. And I suppose at Mayo, you know, Armagh parked the bus and Mayo just didn't know what to do. They were blocked down over and over again. It was very horizontal, it was over and back. And I just couldn't believe they just kept kicking the ball into the right corner forward position to Lisa Cafferty, who'd win the ball, but she's a right footed player and she had nowhere to go, and it was uncomfortable to watch. But listen, Armagh full value for their place in the semi-final, and as we said, Mayo management, they have to go back because there were very few ideas on the pitch. They have to come up with more ideas off it for next year.
So Armagh will play Kerry in the semi-final. Will be Galway against Cork, and Armagh play a Kerry team that defeated Meath by 16 points to 8. We were speculating whether Vicky Wall would feature. She came on at half time, but really the match was already decided somewhat anyway?
Well, somewhat. The wind was really strong, Shane. It was hard to tell how strong it was on the TV, but it was. I've spoken to people who are at the game. You know, it was only 5-4 at halftime. Vicky came on, and I think it's important to mention, Shane, I kind of got a bit annoyed watching the game. Vicky took a lot of heat from the sidelines. She took a lot of heat, I felt, from the ref. I felt she was targeted, and it was just really annoying from a point of view, whereas here's one of our best footballers ever. Okay, granted, she's coming in near the end of the season, but it was just a really poor message, I felt. We want to keep our players in this game, and if I was Vicky Wall, I would have walked off that pitch really annoyed. It made me feel uncomfortable watch and hear how she was treated. But anyway,
is that from the sideline, from fans?
Fans, everything. I just felt it was very targeted. Was really targeted, and it's something that, you know, I don't like, and it's creeping into men's football. It's probably in men's football a good bit, I suppose, but in women's football it hasn't really been a thing. I just felt it wasn't really on. She did have an impact, and you know, she actually did the opposite of what we thought she might do. She didn't go on big solo runs. She was given and going. She was body checked a few times, and I just felt any time she even looked sideways at a player, it was a free against her. I just find it a bit strange. But you know, in the positives, I felt Niamh Carmody was absolutely super for Kerry. She was definitely her best game since the league, and the Kerry's third quarter was massive. They hit 7 points without reply. You did, as you said, you know, you always felt they were going to get over the line. They just went about it, I suppose, in a slower way. Louise Noor Hertig, absolutely fantastic, saw gaps, went for them, pure class and full value. And you know, I'm really happy that Kerry are in a semi-final, and they'll have their tails up with the Dubs gone, for sure.
Very much so. Just briefly in the Dean, we have run out of time, but Cork, a comfortable win for Cork over an understrength Waterford team.
Yeah, randomly, I don't know, the Ballymacarby players weren't there, Kellyanne Hogan, their all-star, wasn't there. Relatively comfortable with 20 minutes to go, Shane. You know, again, an even enough first half, limited enough as Waterford were in terms of personnel. They really put it up to Cork. Cork had 10 different scorers, something that they haven't had all year, and no more than Kerry, they will have their tails up as well. They played a nice bit of football, they moved the ball well, high energy. You know, considering they were relegated from Division 1 this year, they're 9 and all Ireland semi-final, they'd be very, very happy.
Absolutely. Donegal are very happy they avoided the relegation playoff. It is Laois and Kildare this weekend in the relegation playoff. Who's going to win and stay, be safe, I suppose?
You know, when the four teams, I suppose, who were there for relegation were there, I would have felt Laois. Yeah, just, you know, they haven't moved up from that intermediate level, and they're the only team who've really looked out of place in this championship, so I feel Kildare should have enough to get over them.
Okay, great. So if we will be previewing the semi-finals there on Saturday, the 20th of July in Tullamore, Cork, Galway, Armagh, Kerry, 5:15 and 7:30 throw-ins respectively, live in TG Carr. We will be previewing them with yourself, Nadine. For now, thanks so much for popping into the studio. Big thanks Ronan Lawler and Stephen Higgins for working on this evening's show. Rachel May Hannon is up next with the new music show. We're taking a short break and we're going to check in with the news desk. Game On is with you from 6 o'clock tomorrow. Damien O'Mara will speak to you then.
RTE 2FM.